The History and Development of Neurofeedback, a Comprehensive Overview. The Foundation Years. The story of neurofeedback begins much earlier than many realize, rooted in ancient practices of self-regulation. More than 3,000 years ago, Hindu practitioners in India developed sophisticated systems of yoga that demonstrated remarkable control over physiological processes. This ancient wisdom would later be validated by modern science, though the path to this validation would be long and often contentious. The modern field of neurofeedback crystallized in 1969 at a historic meeting at the Surfrider Inn in Santa Monica, California. Barbara Brown, a pioneering researcher in electroencephalography at the Veterans Administration, organized this watershed gathering. The meeting represented a crucial moment where ancient meditative techniques merged with modern scientific research into autoregulation. This convergence would give birth to what we now know as biofeedback. The field's very name emerged from a spontaneous moment during this meeting. When choosing between biofeedback and autoregulation, someone noted that autoregulation sounded too much like government control of automobiles. This simple observation created a tipping point, shifting consensus toward biofeedback, and the Biofeedback Research Society was born. This origin story exemplifies how seemingly minor moments can shape entire fields of study. Early scientific foundations. The scientific understanding of biological self-regulation began taking shape in the mid-19th century. Claude Bernard made a groundbreaking contribution in 1865 with his proposal that the body constantly strives to maintain a steady state, which he termed milieu intérieur. This concept would prove fundamental to our understanding of how organisms maintain stability in the face of changing conditions. Walter Cannon significantly expanded on Bernard's work in 1914, introducing two concepts that would become cornerstone principles in the field. First, he defined stress as a force that acts to disturb internal homeostasis. Second, he developed the concept of homeostasis itself, describing the steady state that organisms work to maintain. These ideas would prove crucial to understanding how biological systems maintain balance and respond to challenges. Hans Selye further advanced our understanding by studying the endocrine effects of chronic stress. His work led to the development of the three-stage general adaptation syndrome, and he popularized the term stress in his influential 1956 book, The Stress of Life. Selye's work helped establish the physiological basis for understanding how organisms respond to prolonged challenges, pioneering research in self-regulation. The early study of self-regulation was marked by several pioneering researchers who laid the groundwork for modern biofeedback. Alexander Graham Bell made significant contributions in 1872 through his work Teaching the Deaf to Speak Using Biofeedback Principles. He investigated two crucial devices, Leon Scott's phonautograph, which translated sound vibrations into tracings on smoked glass, and Koenig's manometric flame, which displayed sounds as patterns of light. These early visualization tools demonstrated the possibility of making invisible physiological processes visible and controllable. Ivan Tarchinov made a crucial breakthrough in 1885 when he demonstrated that voluntary control of heart rate could be achieved directly through cortical autonomic pathways rather than through indirect means like altering breathing rate. This finding challenged prevailing assumptions about the limits of voluntary control over autonomous functions. J. H. Baer's 1901 research on voluntary control of the retrohend's muscle, which moves the ear, provided one of the first solid demonstrations of skeletal muscle self-regulation. His finding that subjects learned this skill by inhibiting interfering muscles helped establish principles of neuromuscular control that would influence later biofeedback applications. The cybernetic revolution. Norbert Wiener's development of cybernetic theory in 1948 marked a crucial turning point in understanding how biological systems maintain control. Wiener proposed that systems are fundamentally controlled by monitoring their results, a concept that would prove invaluable to the field of biofeedback. His work introduced several key concepts: system variables, what is being controlled, set points, goals, feedback, corrective instructions, and feedforward, anticipatory instructions. A simple but powerful example of cybernetic principles can be found in your home heating system. The thermostat continuously monitors room temperature the system variable, compares it to the desired temperature, set point, and makes adjustments based on this feedback. When the system anticipates future needs based on programmed schedules or weather forecasts, it employs feed-forward control. The term biofeedback itself emerged from Wiener's concept of feedback during the 1969 conference at the Surfrider Inn. This theoretical framework provided the language and concepts needed to understand how biological systems maintain control and how we might intervene to improve their function. Learning and behavior, the operant conditioning framework. The scientific understanding of learning and behavior advanced significantly with Edward Thorndike's introduction of instrumental learning in 1911. His law of effect proposed that successful responses are mechanically strengthened by their consequences, a concept that would later be refined and expanded through B.F. Skinner's work on operant conditioning. Skinner's extensive laboratory research in 1938 demonstrated conclusively that animals repeat behaviors that lead to favorable outcomes. His work introduced crucial concepts that would shape biofeedback theory, including reinforcement, the process of strengthening desired responses, and punishment, the process of suppressing undesired responses. Initially, researchers used this framework to categorize physiological responses into those that could and couldn't be voluntarily controlled. This created an artificial divide that ignored millennia of yogic practices demonstrating voluntary control over supposedly automatic functions. This tension between traditional wisdom and scientific skepticism would eventually be resolved through rigorous research in biofeedback. The evolution of EEG research and practice. The development of EEG research and practice can be divided into distinct historical periods, each marked by its own challenges and breakthroughs. In the early days, from the 1800s through the 1940s, EEG equipment was primitive and offered limited utility in studying neuroanatomy and neurophysiology. The period from 1960 to 1985 presented its own challenges. Environmental artifacts frequently contaminated clinical EEG biofeedback devices, making reliable measurements difficult. This era was also marked by excessive expectations and media hype surrounding alpha training, which temporarily damaged the field's credibility. As a result, many researchers shifted their focus to autonomic and skeletal muscle biofeedback. The few professionals who continued investigating EEG biofeedback operated within an often hostile scientific environment. The modern era, from 2005 to the present, has seen tremendous advances thanks to the development of affordable, powerful digital computer technology and microelectronics. These improvements, combined with more accurate sensors and comprehensive normative databases, have democratized neurofeedback training, making it accessible to average clinicians. The increased portability and user-friendly operation of EEG systems have expanded their use beyond clinical settings into home environments. Early contributors to EEG research. The foundation of EEG research was built by a remarkable series of pioneering scientists starting in the late 18th century. Luigi Galvani's 1791 discovery of electrical currents in animals opened a new frontier in biological research, quickly confirmed by Giovanni Aldini and Baron von Humboldt. The field advanced significantly when Ernst Flachéel von Marxo recorded visual cortical potentials, though he didn't yet recognize rhythmic oscillation patterns. Émile du Bois-Reymond made crucial contributions in 1849 by demonstrating electrical conduction in muscles and peripheral nerves. Theodor Fritsch and Julius Eduard Hitzig's 1858 discovery that cortical stimulation could elicit localized motor responses further advanced understanding of brain-behavior relationships. In the annals of neuroscience, few discoveries have had more profound implications for understanding human consciousness and brain function than the detection of brainwaves. Yet the true history of this momentous finding is far more complex and darker than most people realize. The story begins not in Germany in 1924, as is commonly believed, but in London in 1875. Richard Cadone, a physician working with remarkably primitive equipment, made the first recordings of electrical activity in the brain. Using a string galvanometer, a device with a mirror suspended between magnets, Cadone detected oscillating electrical currents from the brains of rabbits and monkeys. These currents were so faint that they were measured in millimeters of deflection from a light beam rather than in volts. Despite these limitations, Kadon correctly identified key properties of brainwaves and their relationship to brain activity. When Kadon presented his findings at the British Medical Association meeting in Edinburgh, he documented what we now recognize as a revolutionary discovery. However, in an era when the brain was still largely mysterious and scientific instrumentation was in its infancy, his insights went largely unappreciated. In a poignant diary entry, he wrote that while his work was well received, it was not understood by most of the audience. Ironically, Kadon later shared his findings at Georgetown University, near the very locations where modern scientists would work to recover and reinterpret his legacy. His contributions were forgotten for nearly half a century, delaying critical advances in brain science. Sir Charles Sherrington made fundamental contributions to neuroscience in 1906 by introducing the terms neuron and synapse in his seminal work, The Integrative Action of the Nervous System. His research significantly advanced our understanding of muscle action, movement, proprioception, reflexes, and spinal nerves. Sherrington's poetic description of the brain as an enchanted loom in his 1942 work, Man on His Nature, captures the dynamic nature of cortical activity during wakefulness, though modern sleep research has shown that cortical networks are considerably more active during sleep than he imagined. Vladimir Pravdichneminsky advanced the field in 1912 by photographing dogs' EEG and event-related potentials. He demonstrated a 12 to 14 hertz rhythm that slowed during asphyxiation and introduced the term electrocerebrogram. His work helped establish the relationship between brain electrical activity and physiological states. The birth of modern EEG. Hans Berger's publication of the first human EEG recording in 1929 marked a watershed moment in the field. Through his research with his son Klaus, Berger discovered the alpha rhythm, the first identified EEG rhythm, which he modestly called the Berger rhythm. He also identified sleep spindles and demonstrated that changes in mental state, sleep, wake, eyes open/closed, drug effects, correspond to changes in EEG patterns. Berger's work laid the foundation for clinical applications by showing that EEG could be used diagnostically to measure the impact of interventions. He performed the first quantitative EEG, QEG, analysis, measuring the signal strength of different frequency components. His work was initially met with skepticism, but was later confirmed by Edgar Douglas Adrian and Brian Matthews using cathode ray oscilloscope recording in 1934. However, recent archival revelations have dramatically altered our understanding of Berger's historical role. For many years, it was widely believed that he died by suicide in 1941 as a victim of Nazi persecution. But documents uncovered after the fall of the Berlin Wall revealed that Berger was, in fact, a supporter of the Nazi regime. He served on courts that mandated forced sterilizations and left behind notebooks containing anti-Semitic statements mixed with his scientific observations. His suicide now appears to have stemmed from depression rather than persecution, aligning his legacy more with perpetrators than with victims of Nazi atrocities. This revisionist history demands a critical reassessment of Berger's place in science. While his technical achievements remain foundational, his moral and political affiliations remind us that scientific progress does not occur in a vacuum. The same scientific tools that illuminate brain function can be wielded within deeply flawed and dangerous ideological frameworks. Understanding Berger's full story is essential not only for historical accuracy, but also for guiding the ethical responsibilities of future neuroscientists. The field continued to advance with contributions from researchers like M. H. Fisher and H. Loewenbach, who provided the first demonstration of epileptiform spikes in 1935. The same year, Frederick Bremer used EEG to study how sensory signals affect vigilance and the sleep-wake cycle, establishing the standard frequency bands we still use today: delta, theta, alpha, and beta. The development of clinical applications. The clinical applications of EEG expanded significantly through the work of several research teams in the 1930s and 1940s. A crucial advancement came in 1935 when Erna Gibbs, Frederick A. Gibbs, H. Davis, and William G. Lennox inaugurated clinical electroencephalography by identifying abnormal EEG rhythms associated with epilepsy. Their groundbreaking work included the identification of interictal spike waves and 3 Hz activity in absence seizures. The collaboration between Erna and Frederick Gibbs was particularly noteworthy, as they worked together to develop a scale for rating beta spindles, demonstrating the value of collaborative research in advancing the field. Frederick Bremer made significant contributions in 1935 by using the EEG to demonstrate how sensory signals affect vigilance and the sleep-wake cycle. His work led to the establishment of the standard bandwidth Bremer bands that we still use today: delta, 0 to 4 Hz, theta, 4 to 8 Hz, alpha, 8 to 12 Hz, and beta, 12 to 32 Hz. This standardization provided a common framework for describing and analyzing brain activity patterns. Although Bremer identified the standard EEG bands, he did not name them. W.G. Walter's work in the 1940s further expanded our understanding of brain waves by naming the delta and theta waves and discovering the contingent negative variation, CNV. He located an occipital lobe source for alpha waves and demonstrated that delta waves could help identify brain lesions like tumors. His development of improved electroencephalograph equipment and pioneering work in EEG topography significantly advanced the technical capabilities of the field. Walter's research on electrical responses to photic stimulation opened new avenues for understanding how the brain processes visual information. The field became more organized with the establishment of the British EEG Society in 1942 and the American EEG Society in 1947. These organizations helped standardize practices and promote research collaboration. Sleep research and EEG. The study of sleep patterns using EEG marked another crucial development in the field. Nathaniel Kleitman, recognized as the father of American sleep research, revolutionized our understanding of sleep through his seminal work in sleep-wake cycle regulation, circadian rhythms, and the effects of sleep deprivation. His research detailed sleep patterns across different age groups and described the basic patterns of sleep cycles and the connecting transitional states. Working with his graduate student Eugene Asarinsky, he made the groundbreaking discovery of rapid eye movement, REM, sleep, a breakthrough that fundamentally changed our understanding of sleep architecture. William C. Dement, another of Kleitman's students, further advanced the field by describing the EEG architecture of sleep stages and the transitions between them. His work establishing the Stanford University Sleep Research Center in 1970 created the first international sleep laboratory, leading to crucial advances in understanding sleep disorders like apnea and narcolepsy. The development of polysomnography, which incorporated eye movement monitoring with EEG during entire nights of sleep, enabled comprehensive study of sleep stages and behaviors like dreaming. This work continues to influence our understanding of sleep disorders and their treatment. The birth of neurofeedback research. Joseph Kamiya's work in the 1960s marked the true beginning of neurofeedback as we know it today. As the father of neurofeedback, he demonstrated that humans could learn to control their alpha rhythm through operant conditioning. His research showed that subjects could not only discriminate when alpha waves were present, but could actually use feedback to shift their dominant alpha frequency by about 1 Hz. Kamiya's work resonated deeply with the cultural zeitgeist of the 1960s and 70s, as Americans explored consciousness through various means, from psychedelics to meditation. His research suggested something profound: that people could learn to control their own consciousness through scientific means. This blend of rigorous science with the potential for personal transformation helped establish neurofeedback as one of biofeedback's most promising areas. Pioneers of clinical applications. Barbara Brown's work in the 1970s demonstrated the clinical potential of alpha-theta biofeedback. Her research focused on identifying the subjective states associated with different EEG rhythms, training subjects to increase alpha, beta, and theta activity using visual feedback. She helped popularize biofeedback through several influential books and served as the first president of the Biofeedback Research Society. Thomas Mulholland and Eric Pieper made important contributions by showing how visual focusing affects alpha rhythm, while Elmer and Alice Green investigated voluntary control of internal states by studying practitioners like Swami Rama and Rolling Thunder. The Greens' work at the Menninger Foundation developing Alpha Theta training would later influence Eugene Peniston's groundbreaking addiction protocol. Thomas Baginski developed innovative applications, including his Twilight Learning device, which monitored EEG during sleep to optimize learning. His work on brain hemisphere lateralization and cognitive decline continues to influence the field today. Modern developments and applications. Barry Sterman's groundbreaking research in 1973 marked a pivotal moment in neurofeedback history. Through meticulous experimentation, he demonstrated that both cats and human subjects could be operantly trained to increase the amplitude of the sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, between 12 to 15 hertz recorded from the sensorimotor cortex. More significantly, he discovered that using EEG biofeedback to train increased SMR production had a protective effect against drug-induced seizures in cats, leading in turn to similar neurofeedback applications in human epilepsy patients. His research showed that the SMR protocol, utilizing both visual and auditory EEG biofeedback, could normalize EEGs even during sleep, with SMR increasing while theta and beta decreased toward normal values. This work should have catapulted SMR training to the forefront of seizure disorder treatment, given its publication in mainstream scientific journals and rigorous methodology. Sterman's legacy extends beyond his clinical work through his co-development of the Sterman-Kaiser, SKIL, QEG database. Joel Luber's contributions in the 1970s built upon Sterman's foundation while opening entirely new therapeutic avenues. Collaborating with Sterman on both epilepsy and attention disorders, Luber demonstrated that SMR training could significantly improve attention and academic performance in children diagnosed with attention deficit disorder with hyperactivity, ADHD. His research at the University of Tennessee proved particularly influential in documenting the importance of theta-to-beta ratios in ADHD. This led to the development of theta suppression beta enhancement protocols designed to optimize these ratios and enhance student performance. Luber's work, alongside Vincent Monastra, helped establish the statistical basis for using theta/beta power ratio measurement as a marker for ADHD, revolutionizing diagnosis and treatment approaches. Erwin Roy John and Frank H. Duffy transformed the field of neurofeedback in the 1970s through their pioneering work in quantitative electroencephalography, QEG. Their collaboration went beyond simply measuring brain waves. They developed sophisticated methods for analyzing and interpreting EEG data that revolutionized how we assess neurological disorders. John's development of neurometrics marked a particular breakthrough by establishing a systematic way to compare an individual's brain activity against normative databases. This innovation brought unprecedented precision to neurological assessment and treatment planning. John's contributions extended beyond measurement techniques. His research on memory challenge prevailing theories by proposing that memory isn't confined to specific brain regions, but is instead distributed across neural networks throughout the brain. This insight fundamentally changed our understanding of brain function and continues to influence modern neuroscience. The combination of John's theoretical insights and Duffy's clinical expertise created a powerful framework for understanding brain activity that remains influential in contemporary neurofeedback practice. Their work laid the foundation for many of the computer-based analysis tools and treatment approaches we use today. Jay Gunkelman's involvement in the field dates back to 1972, when he helped establish the first state hospital-based biofeedback laboratory. Since the mid-1970s, he has become one of the world's most experienced EEG/QEG specialists, fundamentally shaping how we understand and apply these technologies. His work in developing biofeedback and neurofeedback efficacy standards has served as the cornerstone for evidence-based practice in the field. As one of the field's most influential educators and prolific authors, his impact extends far beyond his direct clinical work through the countless professionals he has trained and mentored. Contemporary innovations and clinical applications. The Thompsons, Michael and Linda, have earned international recognition for their comprehensive approach to neurofeedback. Their clinic has become a global destination for clients seeking expert care, while their workshops have educated countless professionals in biofeedback and neurofeedback techniques. Their seminal work, The Neurofeedback book, An Introduction to Basic Concepts in Applied Psychophysiology, has become the definitive text for neurofeedback education. Their contributions were recognized in 2016 when APB awarded them its Distinguished Scientist Award, acknowledging their role as both master teachers and superb clinicians. Margaret Ayers, an early neurofeedback pioneer, made history by establishing the first private clinical practice exclusively dedicated to neurofeedback. Her groundbreaking papers on neurofeedback for traumatic brain injury opened new therapeutic possibilities. Ayers developed innovative digital real-time EEG monitoring technology and investigated novel applications for seizure control and treatment of coma patients with open head wounds. Her neurofeedback protocol, which focused on downtraining slow wave activity while uptraining 15 to 18 Hz activity, has influenced countless practitioners. Niels Birbaumer and his colleagues have conducted groundbreaking research on slow cortical potentials, SCPs, since the late 1970s. Their work demonstrated that subjects could learn to control these DC potentials, which represent gradual changes in cortical dendrite membrane potentials lasting from 300 milliseconds to several seconds. This research has led to successful applications in treating ADHD, epilepsy, and schizophrenia. They've shown that negative SCPs can improve cognitive performance, while positive SCPs increase seizure threshold. Their work has also pioneered developments in brain-computer interfaces, opening new possibilities for communication and control. Sue and Siegfried Othmer's entry into neurofeedback in 1985 represents a unique convergence of personal necessity and scientific innovation. Their journey began as parents seeking help for their son's epilepsy, leading them to collaborate with neurofeedback pioneer Margaret Ayers. This personal experience proved transformative, not just for their family, but for the entire field of neurofeedback. The Othmers' most significant theoretical contribution emerged from their careful observation of treatment outcomes. They proposed that neurofeedback protocols should be selected based on individual symptom patterns rather than diagnostic categories. This insight, drawn from both clinical observation and personal experience, represented a paradigm shift in treatment approach. Moving away from one-size-fits-all protocols, they advocated for a more nuanced, personalized approach to neurofeedback intervention. Their technical innovations were equally significant. They pioneered the development of computer games specifically designed to modify EEG patterns, making neurofeedback more engaging and accessible, particularly for younger patients. Their research into infralow feedback, ILF, training of slow cortical potentials, SCPs, open new therapeutic possibilities by demonstrating how extremely low-frequency brain activity influences neurological function and behavior. This work expanded our understanding of the brain's regulatory mechanisms and continues to influence modern neurofeedback practice. The Othmer's contributions demonstrate how personal experience can drive scientific advancement when combined with rigorous observation and technical innovation. Their work has helped shape contemporary approaches to personalized neurofeedback treatment and continues to influence how practitioners select and modify protocols based on individual patient responses. Innovation leaders and future directions. Eugene Peniston's work at the Menninger Foundation led to the development of the revolutionary Peniston-Kolkoski protocol. This comprehensive approach to treating alcoholism and post-traumatic stress disorder incorporates alpha-theta neurofeedback with various other therapeutic techniques. His protocol showed remarkable success, with 8 out of 10 experimental patients maintaining alcohol abstinence after 12 to 18 months, compared to 0 in the control group. Even the 2 experimental patients who relapsed showed significantly reduced alcohol tolerance. The protocol's success has influenced the integration of guided imagery and behavior change scenarios in contemporary alpha-theta neurofeedback. Robert Thatcher's contributions have revolutionized the technical capabilities of neurofeedback through his development of the Comprehensive Lifespan QEG database, known as NeuroGuide. His innovations include 2- and 4-channel Z-score training, 19-channel surface and Loretta Z-score neurofeedback training, and the development of BrainSurfer. His Handbook of QEG and EEG Biofeedback has become a fundamental resource in the field. Yuri Kropotov, holding doctoral degrees in theoretical physics, philosophy, and neurophysiology, has advanced the field through multiple channels. his development of the Midsar EEG amplifiers and WinEEG software, using the HBI normative database for EEG and ERP analysis, has provided practitioners with powerful new tools. His 2009 book, Quantitative EEG, Event-Related Potentials and Neurotherapy, represents a significant contribution to the field's literature. His work has been recognized with both the USSR State Prize and the Copernicus Prize by the Polish Neuropsychological Society. Roberto Pasquale Marchi's work has fundamentally advanced our understanding of functional brain mapping using EEG and magnetoencephalography. His development of three-dimensional low-resolution electromagnetic tomography, LORETTA, has provided new insights into functional connectivity in brain networks. This technology has enabled more precise targeting of neurofeedback interventions, especially for cortical sites deeper within the skull and better understanding of brain network dynamics. As we look toward the future, the field of neurofeedback stands at an exciting crossroads. The integration of artificial intelligence and machine learning promises to enhance our ability to interpret complex brain signals and personalize interventions. Advances in hardware continue to make systems more precise and accessible, while new understanding of brain networks enables increasingly sophisticated therapeutic approaches. The development of home-based systems and remote monitoring capabilities is democratizing access to these powerful tools. Conclusion: the story of neurofeedback represents one of the most fascinating convergences of ancient wisdom and modern science in medical history. From its roots in ancient meditative practices to its crystallization at the Surfrider Inn in 1969, through decades of technological innovation and clinical discovery, neurofeedback has continuously expanded our understanding of the brain's capacity for self-regulation. Today's neurofeedback practitioners inherit a rich legacy of scientific inquiry and therapeutic innovation. The field has evolved from simple observations of alpha waves to sophisticated applications of quantitative EEG analysis, from generic protocols to personalized interventions, and from basic feedback mechanisms to elegant computer-assisted training systems. This evolution reflects not just technological advancement, but a deeper understanding of the brain's remarkable plasticity and potential for self-regulation. The future of neurofeedback appears brighter than ever as new technologies emerge and our understanding of brain function deepens. The integration of artificial intelligence, real-time imaging, and advanced statistical analysis is opening new frontiers in treatment precision and effectiveness. Meanwhile, more accessible and user-friendly systems are making neurofeedback available to a broader population than ever before. Perhaps most significantly, neurofeedback continues to embody the powerful idea that individuals can actively participate in optimizing their own brain function. As we look toward the future, this combination of scientific sophistication and personal empowerment suggests an expanding role for neurofeedback in mental health treatment, cognitive enhancement, and human potential development. The field that began with curiosity about the brain's electrical rhythms has grown into a sophisticated discipline that promises to play an increasingly vital role in how we understand and enhance human consciousness and capability. The journey from those early experiments to today's advanced applications reminds us that every scientific advance rests on the foundation built by previous generations of researchers, clinicians, and pioneers. As neurofeedback continues to evolve, it maintains its essential promise that understanding and influencing our own brain activity can lead to profound improvements in human health and functioning. In this way, the field honors both its scientific and humanitarian heritage while pushing forward into new frontiers of discovery and healing.